Welcome back. Thank you for exploring the Heights School. This is Nate Gadiano, Associate Director of Admissions, and I'm delighted to be back with another open house presentation. Having discussed physical and intellectual formation at previous open houses, in this presentation, our headmaster, Alvaro De Vicente, will consider the moral formation of the upper school students. We want our boys to be physically strong and intellectually sharp, but our education would be disastrously incomplete if we were to ignore your son's moral growth. We do not want your sons to be nice guys, men without chests, but rather, it is our hope that your sons become strong men who are dangerous and who are good. Of course, to attain this lofty goal takes more than physical and intellectual formation. Indeed, it takes a moral formation and the grace of God. But Alvaro will consider spiritual formation in a future presentation. Thank you again for joining us, and I hope you enjoy Alvaro's presentation on the moral formation of our upper school students.
Let me talk now about particularly the aspect of educational formation that is moral growth, right? So remember we had physical, academic, moral, and the spiritual. So talking about moral, it's going to happen through mentoring. Your son, freshman year, will have a core teacher who will teach him history and English, who will also be his mentor. So he'll be the faculty member that you'll be dealing with most. At the end of his freshman year, your son will be given a list of faculty members who could potentially be his mentor for the last 3 years of high school, sophomore through senior year. He'll get to pick three of the faculty members that he knows from his experience freshman year. He gets to take it home, and you get to also change those picks if you want to, right? As parents, you have a strong opinion one way or the other. And then the head of mentoring will try to match your son's desires with the availability of those mentors. And then he will have that one mentor for sophomore through senior year. Besides the mentors, the faculty will also try to exemplify and guide your son to live a good moral life. And that's going to happen the way they react in class. It's going to happen in the hallway. It's going to happen in the sports field. Right, the coaches are, by and large, faculty members or alumni. Right, it's going to happen on trips. It's going to happen in all the extracurricular activities. It's going to happen in all those areas. The goal of this moral education, as a former headmaster once said, is to develop the kind of young man you would like your daughter to marry. And that person is hard to define, but you know what that looks like, right? You know what that young man looks like. That's the goal. That's the aspiration, right? From that point of view, we think of the mentoring as really a tutorial in Christian manhood, right? What does it mean any given day? It depends what your son needs, right? It's going to mean encouragement. It's going to mean correction. It's going to mean support. It's going to mean guidance. It's going to mean criticism sometimes. It's whatever your son needs. But all those things that will be delivered are always delivered in the same capsule, which is love. Right? The reason that we're doing those things is actually because we want your son to be a really good man, and we care about him. The tagline that we use here at the school, and you've seen it, I'm sure, even in the materials, is man fully alive. So let me talk about that a little bit, what it means. One, he has to be in contact with reality. Your sons, all of us now are under attack. And the attack is one where they try to separate us from reality around us. And that is done in a very, very powerful way by putting a screen between us and reality. I remember years ago standing right here on top of the bleachers watching a soccer game. And it was a good game. We were playing really well, passing the ball around beautifully. And two students were standing next to me, and one said to the other, "Man, this is so good. We're playing so well. It's almost like FIFA." And I'm thinking, "FIFA, you mean like the world championship?" Like, no, sir. come on, sir. Like, FIFA, right? The video game. Thinking, well, that is interesting. And it's interesting because in your mind now, the standard of beauty of this sport is the video game, right? That's not real. Like, this is more real. Like, you know, our students playing soccer is much more real, even if imperfectly, than any video game. So we're going to try to separate your son from the screen as much as possible, right? We don't let him have his phone here during the school day. We have a system where he brings his phone, he surrenders the phone, and he gets it at the end of the day. The seniors get to keep their phone with them, but they're not supposed to use them in the building during the school hours. Students can use the phone before and after school outside because they need to contact you. They need to, you know, make sure they know when they're going to get picked up and stuff like that. And the reason for that is that we all need to be separated from the screens enough time to realize there are people around us, right? And that your son will grow in great sociability when he has to go through everyone's experience of awkward silence next to other people. And sometimes you have to be standing awkwardly next to somebody else before you say, hey. And the other person says, hey. And that's it. But that was a great conversation. Like, at least now there was a connection between two human beings. Much more than if both human beings are just looking at their phone and never having the social, the awkward silence of having to go and reach out to somebody else. The other way that we look at man fully alive is through self-mastery. Right? Self-mastery is hugely important. We all know that. Right? I mean, this, you know, for centuries is the struggle of every human being, right? Struggle of every young man. How do I become a master of myself? How do I get to the point where I'm self-disciplined? How do I get to the point where I not only do I know what the right thing to do is, but I can do it? Now, how can I get to the point when I can get up in the morning without hitting the snooze button and without mom and dad coming in? That I can get down and do my homework when I have to, that I can study with intensity, that I can help somebody right away, that I don't say that thing that just comes to my mind, but I can eat it and keep it to myself. Like, how do I get to that point? Self-mastery. The way we're going to help to grow that here is through things like even the dress code. Like, you know, asking somebody to tuck in your shirt. You know, if your shirt is untucked when you're in high school, it's not the end of the world. But it's the self-mastery. Like, the more you can tuck in your shirt, you can put in your tie, right? You can do those little things. You can be on time, right? Take care of your books. The more you can do that, the more that you grow in the habit of taking care of your own life, right? Of mastering your own life. Another virtue that we're going to look at is courage. And courage is an interesting one, right? Your sons have to be very courageous. C.S. Lewis mentioned, I think it was in Screwtape Letters, that he said, courage is not a virtue, but it's every virtue at its testing point. So to be courageous or brave means to be virtuous when it's easier not to, right? So to be really honest when there's a lot to be gained by being dishonest, that's courageous, right? To be really tough when there's a lot to be gained by giving in and giving up. To be really generous when there's a lot to be gained by not giving to somebody. That's courage. So that's something that is going to be emphasized, that is going to be encouraged very much here. Generosity is going to be another virtue. And here's one way to think about generosity. Many years ago, when we used to have vending machines here at the school, I'm talking about probably 30 years ago. I remember one time a kid going down to buy a Coke, probably was like $1.25 or something like that. He was going to buy a Coke. And some of the kid asked him, hey, do you have money for a Coke? And he said, no, I only have $1.25. It was interesting. So, I mean, the assumption there is, well, no, I mean, I have to get the Coke for myself. If I had more money in addition to that, maybe I would give it to you. But I was interested in hearing that because thinking, well, actually, you do have money to give to him to buy a Coke. It just means that you don't get one yourself, but you do have the money, right? Generosity is not given of that which we don't need. Generosity is given of that which we need. right? If we only give, as Mother Teresa said, if we only give of what we don't need, or it doesn't hurt, then we're not being generous. We're not being charitable. Now, we have to give of that which we need, or at least we think that we need. That's when we're being really generous. And it's not going to be money. That will be part of it. It's going to be time. It's going to be effort. It's going to be patience. It's going to be forgiveness. It's going to be all those. That's where we have to be really generous. But given when we don't, when we think that we don't need to give this, or that we need to keep this, give the time that I think I don't have, give the forgiveness that I think I shouldn't give, give the love that I don't think is not deserved by the other person. That's where the real generosity is going to come in. And then finally, going out to lunch one time with actually, he was a senior who was about to graduate, and we went to a diner. And the waiter, middle-aged waiter, came and took our order and then asked, this student whether he was in college. And he said, no, I'm going to be going in a couple of months. And this this waiter gave him sort of like a, wink, wink, like, hey, this is going to be great, the best 4 years of your life kind of thing. You're really going to live it up, enjoy it. And he left, and I remember this student looking at me and saying, sir, why is it that there are people out there who assume that for me to have a good time as a young man is to do things that my parents and everyone I hold in high esteem would dislike me to do? Like, why is it? So, well, one is, you're right. That's a shame. Right, when people assume that, hey, you're young, so you just can, make whatever moral choice and live it up, and then you'll become responsible. And two, I'm really glad that you're thinking that way, because at 18, at 17, at 16, at 15, you're a young man, and that means that you try to live the life of a man at your age, that you have to be responsible, but that you're living for others, that you're living in the way that we're talking about, with generosity, with courage, right? That this is not a bracket in your life when you can do whatever you want. You have to enjoy where you are, right? Enjoy the sports, enjoy the friendships, but the way that you live in it is with that responsibility and with that moral standing.
Thanks for listening in. If you enjoyed Alvaro's presentation on the moral formation of our upper school students and would like to hear more, please register online for one of our many open houses. For more on the admissions process this year, please check out the Admissions 2020-2021 page on our website. Thanks again, and stay tuned to hear more about how the Heights forms the physical, the intellectual, the moral, and the spiritual good of our boys.